From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Jennifer Ludden. There were more anti-Japanese demonstrations in China today. As many as 20,000 people marched on the Japanese consulate in Shanghai, where they gathered to throw rocks and chant slogans. There were smaller protests in the eastern city of Hangzhou and in Tianjin in the north. The crowds were angry about a new Japanese school textbook, which they say glosses over Japan's wartime atrocities. They also denounced Japan's bid for a permanent seat on the UN Security Council. NPR's Rob Gifford reports that the recent wave of anti-Japanese anger in China has historical resonance.
Another weekend, another anti-Japanese demonstration. It's becoming something of a habit in China these days. And in fact, it's been something of a habit throughout the last 100 or so years. This month's demonstrations have given some historians of the long sweep of Chinese history cause to draw historical comparisons. Mel Goldman of Boston University thinks back to one hot summer in the year 1900.
One comparison, of course, is the Boxer Rebellion, in which Chinese peasants turned against the Japanese and accused them of all kinds of evil deeds. And Japanese were one of several foreigners. They blamed foreign imperialism for their problems, when in reality, of course, the problems were right there at home in their own failing government. The government itself was able to shift this discontent onto the foreigners. And I think in some ways that's what's happening today in China.
There are big differences between then and now. Then, the last imperial dynasty was crumbling. Now, the Chinese strength seems to be growing. But analysts say there are basic similarities. Joseph Escherich is a historian at the University of California in San Diego. He compares the decline of Confucian legitimacy of China's last dynasty in the early 1900s with the decline of Marxism today.
What we're to some degree seeing here is a Communist Party that has almost no remaining legitimacy as a Marxist or socialist movement. Nobody believes in that anymore. And therefore, nationalism is the one thing that they have to appeal to. So they regard nationalism as something that they can turn to their advantage.
For now, they seem to have succeeded. The Communist Party has allowed the patriotic young Chinese to vent their anger so that it's seen on Japanese television and around the world. But the protests have not been mentioned once on Chinese television, nor reported in Chinese newspapers, for fear, perhaps, that people with grievances against the Communist Party might want to demonstrate too. Joseph Escherich says the danger is that, as the Qing dynasty of 100 years ago found to its cost, the encouragement of virulent nationalism can be a two-edged sword.
There's no question that nationalism has probably been the greatest source of danger to Chinese governments over the last 100 years. The rising tide of nationalism among young students, ultimately among the army, in the press, in the last decade of the last Qing dynasty, was pretty much what fueled the revolutionary movement which ultimately brought the dynasty down.
So the Chinese government is working hard to manage and contain the protests, even as they've encouraged them. A test will come tomorrow when the Japanese foreign minister arrives in the Chinese capital for emergency talks. No doubt the Chinese leaders will remind him of Japan's history of aggression. Some historians say the Chinese would do well to reflect on their own history too. Rob Gifford, NPR News, Beijing.